Good morning. Welcome to Shattering Myths, the program which is produced each weekday for those of you who are open to the realization that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, even counterproductive. I am Yada. Our number, if you'd like to join us anytime over the next 2 hours, toll-free, 877-300-7645. I want to begin where we left off in the news yesterday with the senseless killing of the two journalists. A television spokeswoman and a camera operator. I don't think there are any journalists in America. If there are, I have not encountered them. Who were shot by a former coworker, an African American man. There are a couple of things I think need to be said that I did not say yesterday. First of all, we did learn that it was not a disgruntled government worker, as had been the first bit of news out of the Central Virginia Roanoke community, but in fact was a former employee, a former news reader in the same channel in Roanoke. And today, all of the news is that says that he was bullied, that that he was spoken of and treated negatively in a racist way and a homophobic way. So evidently he was a black homosexual. And I want to talk about that for two reasons. One is that there is no more politically correct environment than in television. Television is the great high priesthood for political correctness. And in television, they will do everything in their power to have a disproportionate number of minorities. If the minority population of a community is 10%, they were going to try to have 30% minorities on their staff in invisible positions. So politically correct organizations bend over backwards to for the benefit of minorities and are seldom, if ever, racist. Second, in political correctness, the highest calling is to be a homosexual. Homosexuality is celebrated. It is a badge of honor. And so to try to promote the notion that in a television studio affiliated with a major network, that somebody could have a job and maintain the job who was overtly racist and opposed to, outwardly opposed to homosexuality, is akin to 0%. The reason that this man may have felt that his coworkers did not like him, the reason he may have been fired, is he was reprehensible. He was disgusting. I would not have wanted to talk with him, to work with him, to be next to him. Anybody that would do what he did and plan it, film it, put out a manifesto regarding it, fax, whatever it was, a 20-page fax to the network, and then tweet about it, that kind of an individual is absolutely, completely, and totally worthless, absolutely disgusting. It has nothing to do with his sexual preference. It has nothing to do with his skin color. It has all to do with his character. His character was grossly flawed. He was slime. No wonder people didn't like him. I don't like him. You shouldn't like him.
I agree 100%. And, again, this is one of my biggest pet peeves, is that they're taking a word and they're changing the definition of it to fit to what they want it to be.
Of course.
Bullied is not, oh, I was made fun of, or something like that. Bullied is, give me your lunch money. I don't want to give you. Give me your lunch money, and then I take your lunch money. Or go do this, and if
right.
you don't,
I'm going to beat you up.
I'm going to beat you up.
Right.
That
saying,
is bullied.
Yeah, saying, negative things. I don't like you on Twitter. I mean, come on.
That is not.
That's not being bullied.
Bullied.
And somebody saying, I don't like you. Get away from me. You know, I think you're scum. When in fact you are scum, and this guy proved that he's scum, isn't being bullied. That's people being discerning. You know,
exactly.
If I get a choice and I have the opportunity to go give somebody with Ebola a hug or somebody with a mosquito bite a hug, I'm going for the person with the mosquito bite 9 times out of 10. How about you? I'm discerning.
Man, that 10th time, that better be somebody I care about an awful lot.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, what we have here is this guy was discriminated against not because of the color of his skin. He was discriminated against not because of his sexual preference. He was discriminated against because he was scum. That's why. And this notion that he was bullied or there was racism involved in this studio is absolutely and totally false. Now,
well,
the second thing that bothers me about this, go ahead.
How little must he have thought about himself that if somebody tells him how they feel about him, and it's just a coworker, so it's somebody that probably doesn't know him, like, you know your coworkers, but you don't really know everything about your coworkers.
Right.
So, you know, if they say something, you know, mean to you, that you think is mean, what do you think about yourself that tears you down?
Of course. But beyond that, this guy's perceptions, his ability to analyze the world around him and come to reasoned, appropriate moral judgment was completely and totally flawed. So you could set such an individual off like this because he could have said, you know, I deserve the promotion over so-and-so. This girl got the, I'm just making up a hypothetical, this girl got the opportunity for a promotion, the one that was doing the broadcast, and the cameraman, he may have gone to the cameraman and said, you know, I should have had that. You need to tell the management that I'm better than she is. And the guy might have said, no, I'm not going to do that. And he would have viewed that as a homophobic, racist attack on him because he's so warped. Now, the second thing I want to go to is the President of the United States coming out and saying, my heart's broken. He didn't know these people. You know, if you were the mother or father, brother or sister, child, neither one of these, I don't think, had children, good friend, co-worker, knew them well, then your heart can be broken that their lives were senselessly snuffed out by a scumbag. But you don't know them, your heart's not broken. Come on, that's ridiculous. It's despicable for him to say that. And he's saying it disingenuously because if you say that and then say, which proves that we need gun control, then it makes it sound like you're promoting gun control because you're moral, because you're caring, because you're trying to protect all of the innocent victims out there. And none of that's true. He's lying. He's being disingenuous. It's the standard behavior of this scumbag that we have as the President of the United States.
Which is my other pet peeve. You can be... You can, your heart can go out to the family. You can, you know, wow, that's tragic. But for them to then say, oh, this is such a tragedy, and here's my agenda.
You want to talk about a tragedy? You've got 50 people whose bodies are decomposing because they were locked inside of a lorry, a truck, en route to try to gain asylum from the hell that's being perpetrated between Shia and Sunni Muslims in Syria and in Iraq. And men, women, and children seeking freedom from that, although carrying the same disease of Islam along with them, trapped in there, and they died in there. Can you imagine the agony? Now, I don't know any of these individuals, and I can't say my heart breaks, but it certainly is pained by that senseless death. And the reason that they had to be refugees was because the world continues to embrace Islam, to arm Islam, to lie on behalf of Islam, as opposed to correctly assess the reality of Islam, which is a death cult. It's a criminal enterprise. And when we continue to give it credence, we continue to provide arms to it, we continue to create this mess of millions of people trying to flee it, but carrying the very disease with them that caused it in the first place, Islam. Oh, so what a sad set of affairs, and how it's being twisted on the this incident in Virginia. I do want to turn to the discovery that took place. CNN is reporting. It says that a number of dead bodies, they think it's 54, in the back of a truck in Australia. Just a day after the Italian Coast Guard said that it found over 50 people who lost their lives trying to cross the Mediterranean in a boat. So 100 people as refugees. Dead in the period of 24 hours. Who knows how many more. And it's all because George W. Bush was moronic. Let's just lay it on the line. And its roots go back to Jimmy Carter and the stupidity of his foreign policy vis-a-vis the Ayatollah and the Shah of Iran, and how we whisked the Shah back into power. He created a fundamentalist religious state based upon Shia Islam, and then during this period of time, rather than trying to mitigate our disastrous mistake, what we ended up doing is providing chemical and biological weapons to Saddam Hussein, a dictatorial thug, so that he could fight a proxy war against the mistake we had made in Iran. And that war led to the death of a million people. Simultaneously, Jimmy Carter and his national security advisor, Zbigniew Brzezinski, had the brain-dead idea that we could use the Taliban, renting them from Pakistan, if we provided Pakistan with billions of dollars worth of weapons to support their dictatorial regime, we could rent the Taliban so the Taliban could fight a proxy war against the Soviet Union. And that created Al-Qaeda. And then George Bush decides that somehow Saddam Hussein, who was an overt opponent of Al-Qaeda, that he was harboring Al-Qaeda, and he was a home base to Al-Qaeda, and so we should go invade Iraq. And when we did that, what we set in place is the very war that is causing these refugees. I think it's always important to look at the root cause of something. You can't solve a problem unless you understand what caused the problem. You know, to treat symptoms is brain dead. And that's what's happening in Europe. They're all wringing their hands and say, you know, the 50-some-odd people who died on the boat, that's bad. The 50-some-odd people who died in the truck, that's bad. Boy, we got to find out, what caused their deaths. The fact that you've got the leaders of Europe bringing in millions upon millions of Muslims, which will completely change the character of Europe. You're bringing the most deadly, the most destructive poison ever known to man into your country. And as all of this is transpiring, no one is saying, what caused it? Why is this happening? And it's our fault. By our fault, I mean it's America's fault. We caused it. It's a combination of our fault and Islam. But Islam, left to its own devices, wouldn't be causing a catastrophe of the current size. Now, let me give you some further examples. So we took what was arguably the best dictator in the Islamic world, Saddam Hussein. And we saw to it, based on a pile of lies, that he was taken down, and we invaded Iraq. A million people died as a result of that invasion. Just as a million people died in the Afghani civil war that we caused to have a proxy war against the Soviet Union. And what we ended up doing is, because we don't seem to be able to count or think, we don't seem to think of cause and consequence, once we took out the dictator, we allowed the only influence left in Iran, the Shia mullahs, who were all from Iran, to take control of the country. And they did. And then we had this naive notion that there would be three happy little groups of Muslims, and then some minority Christians and Zoroastrians would all live happily ever after together under democracy. Too stupid to know that Islam is never going to be democratic. Islam means submission. There's no choice in Islam. There's no free will in Islam. Read the Quran if you don't understand that. And that they would all just get along, not recognizing that Sunnis and Shias have been in war with each other for 1,400 years. But make matters worse, after empowering Shia Islam and empowering Iran, we gave the Iranian Shias in Iraq a powerful army, effectively increasing artificially the influence of Shia Islam against Sunni Islam. And soon the Shias in Iran not only controlled Iran, but also Iraq and Syria through Assad, and then Lebanon through Hezbollah. And that sent up shockwaves through the rest of the Sunni Islamic world, particularly in Turkey, who, as a Ba'athist, Assad was an ally of Erdogan, but once he sided with the Shia because we had killed his previous Ba'athist supporter in Iraq, then it became a matter of a religious crusade. And so the Shias that America had armed in Iraq began to kill the Sunnis. They used American weapons to bludgeon them and to annihilate them. And they began to annihilate the Christians that Saddam Hussein had protected. And they began to annihilate the Zoroastrians that Saddam Hussein had protected. And then the Kurds split off and said, "The hell with you. We're going to steal as many weapons as we can, and we're going to create our own country up here. We're not going to have anything to do with the rest of you." And a civil war began, and that's how Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi created the Islamic State in Iraq, was to defend Sunni Muslims against the onslaught of Shia that were empowered by American weapons. We created this civil war. It continued to grow because we then provided weapons on both sides. Petraeus and George Bush came up with this amazingly idiotic, I mean, just completely stupid idea of the Awakening Program, where we were going to arm Sunni Muslims allegedly so they could go after the non-existent Al-Qaeda in Iraq, when in fact those weapons were all used to defend Sunnis against Shias and became the weapon base that launched the Islamic State. And the Islamic State is now based largely on the Awakening Program that Petraeus had started. And yet you don't have any media spokesperson or any politician accepting blame for having touted this disastrous strategy. Well, that gave rise to the civil war between Sunni and Shia in Iraq that is so deadly, the civil war between Sunni and Shia in Syria that is so deadly, and the civil war in Yemen between Shia and Sunni that is so deadly. And then to exacerbate the problem, we took out Muammar Gaddafi and bombed their government into submission, while through the auspices of Qatar, the United States provided Islamic terrorists with billions of dollars worth of weapons. Headlines in BBC News is plea for EU answer to migrant crisis. I don't want to say Muslim crisis, but that's what it is. This other article says tens of thousands of people, mainly from Africa and the Middle East, have been put to sea this year in hopes of reaching Europe. They don't want to say from the Muslim world, in hopes of reaching the non-Muslim world. It's important to understand how we got to this problem, and it's a combination of blunders by U.S. presidents. Jimmy Carter and Zbigniew Brzezinski. Gates, who was under Bush as Secretary of Defense and before him as CIA director, played an integral role at arming Al-Qaeda and the Taliban to fight the proxy war against the Russians. The United States played a massive role in providing the chemical and biological weapons that were deployed by Saddam Hussein against Iran. And then we declare war on Iraq, going into Iraq to depose our former ally. And we ended up with chaos. And the chaos was absolutely predictable. I predicted it before we invaded. And now we're involved in a massive civil war between Sunni and Shia Muslims. And America is arming both sides so that the death toll is catastrophic. And the carnage is beyond the typical destruction of war. Because the two sides are both immoral. Both sides will rape little children. They'll rape boys and girls. Gang rape them. They'll sell a Shia will sell a Sunni into slavery and vice versa. They'll decapitate. They'll crucify. They make public spectacles of being savages. And they justify, both of them justify everything they're doing on the Quran and have the blessing of their highest ranking religious leaders. We not only created the problem as the United States, we exacerbated the problem throughout the region. And that includes Libya. And that includes Egypt, where we provide the military means for them to impose their dictatorial military junta over their people. So you would think that in a sane world, with Muslims having more land than they can possibly deal with Saudi Arabia being this gargantuan expanse of unused land, that these Muslims would be fleeing to Saudi Arabia. They have the wealth to take them in. They have the wealth to sustain them. They have the wealth and the land to care for them. Why aren't they all going from Iraq and Syria into Saudi Arabia? Why aren't the Libyan Muslims going into Egypt? Lots of land. And the reason is that Muslims don't respond appropriately. And so, knowing how caustic the religion is, seeing the religion up front and personal and how savage it is, the refugees want to get away from those wielding the religion, but yet they're going to take the religion with them. It is a really screwed up world. And the sane thing to do would be to force, to say, Saudi Arabia, you've got the land, you've got the wealth. Kuwait, you've got the land, you've got the wealth. You create refugee camps. You sustain them. They're not coming to Europe. But they wouldn't be coming to Europe had the United States dealt with Iraq and Libya sensibly, as opposed to breaking both countries, going to war in both places. We created this problem. And you're not going to resolve the problem unless you come to understand what caused it and to stop doing it. Because we're making it worse. Because what's the United States doing? Rather than admitting that by deploying our military, we made a bad situation worse, we're continuing to deploy our military and we're increasing the use of our military and increasing the use of our weapon systems there. And then we're using our drones in other Islamic countries to manufacture 1,000 more enemy for everyone we kill. And now it's in the millions. And you've got people in these countries saying, no, we are not going to accept millions of Muslims. Not recognize, you know, we recognize what they have done to themselves, what they're doing to themselves. No, we don't want this. And yet you've got the leaders not accepting responsibility, allowing them to come in. It's a crisis without resolution, particularly since we're unwilling to assess the cause of this problem. If you've been keeping up with Afghanistan recently, it's become especially deadly. The Taliban seized a district headquarters in Afghanistan's Helmand province Monday, despite the U.S. airstrikes to repel them. Two NATO soldiers were shot dead by uniformed men on the army base in the area. So the very people that we had provided uniforms for, that we had provided the weapons for, that we had provided the bullets for, used those bullets to shoot back at us. And we think that there is a resolution here. How many lives would have to be squandered before you realize this isn't going to work? There is no way to resolve this. The longer we stay, the worse we make it. There is no end game. There is no peace. There is no victory here. We ought not have invaded. We made a bad situation worse. We squandered hundreds of billions of dollars. We squandered thousands of lives. And there is no resolution. You know that you have presidential candidates now on the Republican side saying that Obama is to blame for the Islamic State because he fled Iraq and too early and pulled our troops out too early. No, he didn't. Did it too late. There was no scenario for Iraq other than the one we're experiencing. The moment we invaded, this was inevitable. It did not matter if we stayed there for 10 years or 100 years. If we deployed 100,000 troops or a million troops. It didn't matter if we squandered $2 trillion or $10 trillion. This was the consequence of that invasion. It was inevitable. There was no other possible outcome other than the one we're experiencing. And yet, the presidential candidates are saying that, well, the Islamic State, that's because Obama pulled out of Iraq. If he had not pulled out of Iraq, we wouldn't have them. And not recognizing. In fact, even Jeb Bush will say that, you know, that he won't. That the surge was spectacularly successful, and he squandered the success of the surge. The awakening program. When, in fact, it's the awakening program that created the Islamic State. And we just must have dunderheads that are running for political office, and since they have popularity, they must be speaking to dunderheads. But at least, Glenn, you're not a dunderhead. What have you to say?
Two things. One about the two news people who were killed.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I was thinking, you know, just in this age of murderous barbarism and hate. Mm-hmm. You know, there's something. Even if we said, for the sake of argument, that the fellow who did the killing mm-hmm. was subjected to all manner of racial and sexual preference bias and internally,
which absolutely did not occur. But let's just pretend it did.
For the sake of argument, even if he did, mm-hmm. there's something to be said for the punishment fitting the crime. And, you know, does such behavior or, you know, being the recipient of such discrimination necessarily warrant an immediate death sentence for the perpetrator?
Well, of course not. I mean, the consequence in the media of being racist or, as they would say, homophobic, is that you get fired and you're disgraced, so you're never hired by anybody else again. So if it actually did occur, which it didn't, all he would have to do is go to management and say, this is what so-and-so said, this is what so-and-so did. These are either homophobic or racist comments. They have no place in a television studio. And the management would absolutely, unequivocally have fired the two people who were perpetrating such assaults to political correctness. That would have occurred in 100 out of 100 circumstances if, in fact, it was what had transpired. But it didn't transpire. Scumbag, and so they didn't like him because he was scummy.
And even that's, and what you said is true, even in, you know, highly conservative, lily white Roanoke, Virginia. And even if he hadn't gotten a response there, he could have launched a civil suit, blown it up in the media, and gotten rich.
Yeah, so, keep in mind that Roanoke, Virginia, like Charlottesville, Virginia, just up the stream a bit from it, is not and Lynchburg, Virginia, in between the two. They're not lily white. I am a Virginia resident, and Virginia has a very significant percentage of both African Americans and Hispanics. It has a very low percentage, from what I can tell, at least outside of the Washington, D.C. area, of both Jews and Asians. But in the Washington, D.C. area, that, of course, that all changes. But the thing that I really liked about Virginia was the racial harmony, the racial harmony that I experienced there. And I've seen a lot of it in a lot of different places. Like two nights ago, my wife and I were out to dinner, and we were surrounded by African-American families. Our waitress was African-American, and she was bright. She was charming. She's one of the best waitresses I've had at a meal in a very long time, very engaging. And there was three-generation family sitting next to us, grandpa and grandma, wife and husband and wife, and their two grandkids. And they were just so spectacular. They're just, I mean, they were perfectly attired, well-spoken, clearly well-mannered, and the kids were just so spectacular. You see the interrelationship and the conversation. We were sitting right next to them, and it was such that as they got up and walked to the car, I walked out and just said, you know, it was an honor being able to have dinner sitting next to your family. You have a beautiful family. You know, what a wonderful example you are, and I just want to tell you that this was a spectacular experience, just being able to be near your family. It's common. So Grandpa, very distinguished, well-spoken man. After I walked over, and he, you know, first of all, you know, today's world, here's this guy walking over to him, and he knows that I was sitting next to them at dinner. You know, say, okay, well, you know, what is he going to complain about? And, you know, I reach out my hand and, you know, and I just tell him how proud he should be of his family. And he reached out his hand, shook my hand and said, you know, thank you very much. You made my day. And we chatted a bit. But, you know, that's not all of the African-American experience I had here in Central Ohio. I spoke about a week ago of driving in a more downtown area in the public housing and seeing scores of African American youth loitering around liquor stores, and they're always loitering around liquor stores. In Virginia, we were talking about Virginia, and while my overall experience in Virginia is that racially it's very beautifully integrated, and everyone gets along. As the other day, I was driving back one of the public housing areas, and woman and her boyfriend, clearly intoxicated, were driving very erratically. I tried to, you know, say, oh, you need to calm down here. You almost hit us and almost hit two other people. And they went ballistic and clearly intoxicated. And you, I'm going to tell you that I think the difference, Glenn, is those who are dependent, who have made a life out of being dependent and not being responsible, are a serious problem. They're a threat to themselves. They're a threat to others. And those who have taken responsibility for themselves and for their families, lovely people. So, I don't know if you're still there, Glenn, but that's my assessment of Roanoke, a place that I've spent a lot of time in.
I have, you know, similar mixed experiences here in the suburbs of Philadelphia. You know, mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's what I guess what it is. Decent behavior is where you find it.
Yeah. But, you know, when I was running businesses, and, you know, I had businesses that had thousands of employees, but and when they get thousands of employees, you know, I have almost no influence of who's hired and who's not hired and who's promoted and the like. But when you start the businesses, and all my businesses were entrepreneurial, so, you know, I was the first employee, unpaid help, if you will. And, but, you know, the second, third, fourth, fifth, you know, you know, all the way up to about 100 some odd, no, as the entrepreneur, the founding entrepreneur, the guy that's actually digging in their own pocket to make payroll, I chose the people. And 100% of the time, if I had a somebody whose skin color was different than mine, whether they be Asian or Hispanic or African American, I always gave them the nod. All things being anywhere close to being equal, I felt that an integrated workplace was better. You get more viewpoints, more cultural, but it just thought it was the right thing to do. And never been disappointed in making those calls. But that isn't to say that there isn't a serious problem in the African-American community since you brought up this killing in the Roanoke area. It's important to recognize that when there is violence and shootings, killings between blacks and whites, that it's 8 times more likely that the black is going to kill the white than it is the Caucasian killing the African-American. And that's a number we ought not ever ignore. That is a very serious indication of a very serious problem.
It's interesting. If you can, it's funny. I'm thinking that if you can get some true diversity where, like, there are tensions between blacks and whites, there are slightly different tensions between Hispanics and blacks.
Yes.
But when you can bring, when you can really diversify and then bring in, you know, Asians or people from various places in the world and get an actual, you know, more diversified mix, then, like, instead of having cliques and little power blocks or this group versus that group, you know, can get people really interacting interracially across the line.
I did not see that happen in California, another place where I spent a lot of time. You know, for example, in California, we actually left California not because of black-on-white violence, although that started the ball rolling. When we saw the riots, both Rodney King and the Watts riots, and we were being threatened at my factories and places of work where we had to put armed guards on the roof because our delivery men were being shot and killed. That started it, but it was actually the Asian gangs that caused us to leave. They were the most vicious. And there is a lot of gang mentality all the way up even through the educational institutions in California. A lot of stratifying.